I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. January is a big month for Florida politics. The legislative session gets underway next week, and lawmakers face a $2 billion state budget shortfall and a once-in-a-decade task of redistricting. Florida's presidential primary is later this month, but who's going to win it? We'll put that and more to 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Plus, we remember iconic saxophonist Sam Rivers, who passed away last week. That's ahead on Intersection. And I'm joined by 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor, of course, former Democratic State House Representative. Good to have you in, sir.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to Lou Fry, former Republican Congressman.
Health and happiness to all of us. We could use it.
So, guys, we are kicking off the new year here. So what is going to be the big story in the new year 2012, Lou Fry?
Well, I think the big story is going to be the presidential election and the election of Congress. I mean, that isn't going to go away. It's been with us for a couple of years now, and it's obviously going to have an incredible impact on the economy, good, bad, or indifferent. Dick says go to Casadega. It's probably the best thing we could do. Also, in Florida, I think we have special problems because of the couple billion dollar shortage, because the lack of high-paying technical jobs, growth in the tourist industry, but a lot of those jobs don't translate to larger salaries, and which is a heck of a thing that we need.
So I'm hearing you say that just because the calendar rolls over, these issues that were such a plague in 2011 still going to be with us very much.
Yeah, they are. And then you take something like the Straits of Hormuz and cutting off the oil, which won't happen. The Navy will clean them out if they.
That's
if they
Iran
do that.
Talking about that, but
yeah, but I mean, it could come back. And I remember when this happened in the '73, Dick, and so forth. People were standing in the gas lines. Tourism went to heck. I mean, something like that could have more of an impact in Florida than it would in a lot of other states because of the driving, because of tourism.
Well, Dick Batchelor, what's on your radar here in the new year?
Well, I think as Lou pointed out, it's almost unlimited issues. Foreign policy, obviously, very key with all of that's going on around the world. Secondly, at the state level, with a $5 billion combined over last year shortfall in the budget, what cuts are going to be made? What kind of leadership will we get out of the legislature? Reapportionment. And then as regards the presidential election, I've got to go back and add one caveat, and that is it could be a third-party candidate. If so, that helps Barack Obama. Takes us back to the Ralph Nader race against Al Gore in the state of Florida.
Who are you looking at for a third-party candidate?
Well,
Ron Paul.
Well, Ron Paul, he's not ruled it out, so which means he's ruled in. Donald Trump is the legend
Trump
in his own
leaving
mind.
The Republican Party just recently?
How will we know? Who
Hallelujah.
Cares? But, you know, there are a lot of things going to happen this year, all unpredictable. That's why Lou was alluded to going to Casadega, get with a fortune teller, we might be more accurate.
Well, you mentioned getting stuff out of the legislature. And, of course, Rick Scott wrapping up his first year in office, campaigned on the promise of 700,000 jobs in 7 years. We've seen some job growth, still a high jobless rate, near 10% above the national average. The governor stopped high-speed rail. That was big early in his first year. He got super low approval ratings, did this kind of turnaround dance, and has made nice with the press and some of his other colleagues. Where does Governor Rick Scott go in 2012, Lou Fry?
Well, I think he starts acting like a governor of a state. And I think that's been really good. He's put people around him who know Tallahassee, who know what's going on.
Because he came in wanting to eschew the
Well, he
the
used
insiders.
That great line that you run, you know, when you run it, nobody knows what it's about. We're going to run the state like a business. Well, that's a great idea, and I'm all for business principles. But unfortunately or fortunately, you got three branches of government, and you can't run it like a business. You got to deal with the legislature. And you learn that, like, the Speaker of the House doesn't like to read about a project closing his district in the newspaper. I mean, you've got to learn how to work with other people.
That's what happened to Dean Cannon, the House Speaker,
yes.
Regarding high-speed
yeah.
rail.
And so he's really trying now to make a comeback and to work with the other branches of government. And, you know, will it work? I'm not sure, but I know it'll be better than it was last year.
A year-long learning curve? What do you think, Dick Batchelor? Is that too long for a governor to get his bearings?
Well, its popularity is below 30% right now. And so he's not doing very well at all. So he have,
but it's up.
Well, he has every reason to go up. Yeah. But I think Lou said the fact is Florida has by constitution a very weak governor, number one. But let's just assume for a moment he's the CEO. Then you have 160 board members, 40 members of the Senate, 120 members of the House.
That's one heck of a board.
and they really have veto power. Really, they can decide what your budget looks like, and they can decide what kind of legislation comes out. You have the threat of the veto. You have limited veto on legislation.
And, but the House and Senate, as you pointed out, and people ought to listen to that, can sustain. He can veto it. They can override it,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. So the House and Senate. But he's playing better with them now. He's finally understood that there was an old saying, you got to dance with the one who brung you. And the one who brung him the first year was the Tea Party. But the fact is, the Tea Party doesn't run the House and the Senate. There's some influences. But the fact is, the bottom line, you've got to sit down and work with the House and Senate members and get what you need out of Tallahassee. The closer he plays with them, the better he'll look in the polls.
Now, when we were just starting off 2011, we had a lot of stuff on the table, like this high-speed rail project, other things that we were kind of speculating which way was the governor going to go on it. In 2012, what issues are you looking for the governor to make some bold stances on, or do you anticipate he will?
Well, he made one hint at one, but then he put a caveat on it. That was, you know, combined, there's about a $5 billion shortfall in the budget last year and this year, and the budget cuts are going beyond the fat and the muscle. They're down into the marrow of the bone right now. They're really going to be very difficult budget cuts. Now, he gave a hint that he would not be adverse to the sales tax being applied for internet purchases. But then he went on to say, however, as long as it was his net revenue neutral. And that kind of took it away. On one hand, I think a lot of people overwhelmingly would support sales tax on internet purchases so you don't unfairly compete with local businesses. And he would generate almost $2 billion. But on the other hand, to say, but it has to be net revenue neutral, that really hamstrings any ability to find any funding.
Dick, don't you think that we've talked about it before, that the casinos are dead? I mean, the reason I mentioned it, because there's a big source of money people were spending already.
This, of course, in the months leading up to January, we've had this proposal for three large casinos to expand in South Florida with the idea of bringing more revenue
this
to the state.
This is not new. As we talked about it. I was approached with this when I was running for governor to support it, which I didn't. But the problem is you've taken that money off the table, and people had started to divvy that money up already. You know,
already anticipating.
Where are you left, and what are you going to do? The other thing I think that I see happening, and you always personalize something, but in the education field, for instance, we passed a law which said you have to take civics now in seventh grade, a whole year of it, and you got to start teaching it in first grade. Well, the problem is that's great, but who's going to do it? Well, the answer is, in this instance, the Fry Institute is doing it, a 501c3, a non-governmental organization, because there isn't any money in the system to develop the teaching for it, to develop the course, et cetera. And I think you're going to find more and more of that the 501c3s may be playing more of a role than they ever have before.
Lou Fry, we've had years since Jeb Bush basically left office. Florida's budget has been contracting. Of course, the economy has been going down in parallel.
You don't know which is going faster, right?
That. But I wonder, you know, what do you think is the long-term impact of these years and years of cuts? You heard Dick Batzler saying, you know, we're past the bone, which is where we thought we were last year, into the marrow. I mean, how far can you go and sustain these kind of cuts for year after year after year?
The answer is you can't sustain them year after year. But the fact of it is we've been in an unprecedented slump for 4 or 5 or 6 years, whatever it's been, and we're still standing, and hopefully it'll turn a bit and the income will start back and we'll be able to do it. But I think coming back, I think it's going to be a much leaner education system, and probably with some changes. You may have to look at somebody called me actually last night and said, hey, why do we have textbooks? Kids can now should be able to get everything over the internet
the
or so
e-book.
Forth. There's a lot of things, but I mean, you're going to have to look at things, and business as usual isn't going to work. You're really going to have to think outside the box.
You know, the advantage of the higher education system, though, is that Florida still maintains one of the lowest tuition rates, but they keep going up 15% a year.
You're talking about the colleges.
Colleges, right, and this is the third year. In fact, prepaid tuition, when I bought it several years ago, was maybe $6,000 or $7,000 per student. 2 years ago, it was at $15,000. This year, it's at $45,000. So you've got the prepaid tuition costs going up. You've got tuition costs going up. And I think what they're going to do at higher education, they'll probably do something on prepaid tuition because it's already $45,000. And they'll probably do something on Bright Futures and require you higher test scores and do away with the second tier. So at least higher education has some latitude, such as tuition increases. K through 12 has no latitude. Last year, they cut the K through 12 budget over $520 per student. The government's proposing to put about $100 back in. You're still short, net short. So K through 12 is where I think in education you really have constraints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you allow Florida to be the as it is the 46th state in the country in civics education, that only four are dumber than we are in terms of it, that kind of thing, that is not a base that you can build from in terms of having a economy that moves on more than one leg, and it's just not a tourist leg.
Well, I want to ask you in general, as we get ready to start this new year, moving into 2012, which Florida Republicans are you going to be keeping an eye on? I'm wondering, Marco Rubio running for vice president, any takers there?
I don't know that it would happen, and we've talked about it before, and I think obviously if, let's say Romney was the nominee, picking someone like Marco Rubio would certainly help in Florida. You don't need help. You would like to have Florida to win. You don't absolutely need Florida to win, depending on if you're in Michigan, Ohio, and some other states.
Sure makes it easier, though.
But it makes a lot easier. He keeps saying he's not in. I think Marco Rubio, and I said this before, is really playing the best I've ever seen anybody play it. You know, he's kind of tapped down any discussions about that to his advantage, I think, in which he still has the allure, the attraction. But we'll see. If it gets really, really desperate as a third-party candidate, and if he can't win Florida without Marco Rubio, and Marco Rubio really appealing. And the last thing I'll say, too, is Marco Rubio has an appeal where the Republicans are losing their appeal, and that is with Hispanic voters. So Marco Rubio brings a lot of attraction to a Republican ticket.
Well, I wonder, do you think, speaking of people tapping down stories, we just saw a rumor floating again about Jeb Bush potentially running for president in 2016. What do you think about that, Lou Fried? Bush dismisses that.
Well, I think I wrote a column about it suggesting that he do it, and everybody wrote me back and say we're Bushed out. And I think, seriously, that I think that's a problem. I think if his last name hadn't been Bush, he could be the leading candidate right now. And I think it would be very difficult for him to get in. A brokered convention, always a possibility, a stalemate there. He would be an attractive candidate. I think if he's in the race now, he'd be leading it. But and this year, nothing is out of bounds. I mean, it's just who knows what's going on? Nobody. All the rules we've had, you can basically throw out so far.
Well, looking ahead this month, the presidential primary for the GOP, also January 31st, the Republicans sacrificed delegates at this year's GOP convention to move up this primary. They're going to gain more influence, hopefully, in selecting.
And by the way, they may lose all their delegates.
That is the
because they want to do a winner-take-all. And the Republican Party has said no winner-take-all till April 1st. So
that's a long time away.
Yeah.
Very long time away.
It'll come up fast. Well, you know, this GOP primary coming in the end of the month, Lou Fry, who's going to win it?
Well,
in Florida.
In Florida right now, who knows? I mean, it changes daily. But right now, I'd say Newt is not on an ascension curve. I would say that you're probably looking at Romney to win the primary. Remember, too, in Florida, the other states that are following the rules that are not doing winner-take-all. So when you're looking at New Hampshire and someone comes out of New Hampshire, you have five or six people running up there, 30% may win New Hampshire or 35%. And that doesn't give you many electoral votes, and it won't give you the kick that you used to have coming out of Iowa and New Hampshire. That kick is not going to be as big in South Carolina or Florida. And so a lot of the states are rear-ending it. California's, I think, moved back to June. A lot of the big states have moved back just because they want to take advantage of the winner-take-all rule, which starts April 1st.
Well, let me ask you, Dick Batchelor, Florida coming up after Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, how much of an impact do you think that primary is going to have, and who do you select as the GOP winner?
Well, this is all conjecture. Let me just change the question a bit and tell you what the Democrats would hope for. Democrats would hope for Ron Paul to win Iowa. Mitt Romney could go ahead and have New Hampshire, keeping in mind that it's an open primary, so independents can vote in the Republican primary. 1 week later, Newt Gingrich wins South Carolina. You come to Florida in a very brokered position, or broke. It depends on whether or not Newt can get the money. If Newt can get the money to stave off the anti-Newt ads, I think he can. He will win South Carolina, I believe. He could win Florida. But that's all, you know, the point I'll make here is that there's so many super PACs spending so much money just going after these people and throttle them by the neck, and they're so, so negative. The fact is, the more of these super PACs influence, the less you have as a voter. So they're the super PACs are helping pick the nominee. But I think the Democrats, I can tell you, that's the way we'd like to see it. We'd like to see a brokered convention.
And from the Republican standpoint, they'd like to see it over and get somebody there and stop all this fighting going on. In Iowa now, we've seen Santorum, bouncing around. Huntsman is doing okay in New Hampshire. But they're just, let's get this thing over, and Obama's getting a free ride. He's having a wonderful time.
Well, let me ask you, Lou Fry, a little bit inside here, but are you endorsing anyone?
No, I didn't think, and I've had the opportunity, frankly, to be involved at a fairly high level in a couple of campaigns. I didn't think I could do it because I, like Dick, I do some other stuff and I write and this kind of thing, and I thought that if I did it, it would just take away my participation in this thing. And this is, I can participate in this form, and it's just an amazing year we're going through and continue to go through. Well, and I don't want to be on the sidelines of it.
Well, we're happy to have you in this forum always. You're, of course, listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm talking with 90.7's political commentators, Democrat Dick Batchelor and Republican Lou Fry. I'm Mark Simpson. What issues are you going to be watching here in 2012? You can tell us about it on Facebook or Twitter, or shoot an email over to intersection@WMFE.org. You know, talking about politicos to watch here in 2012, Pam Bondi, the Republican Attorney General, is gaining big-time popularity. She's close to high-profile politicians like Mitt Romney, has adopted high-profile causes such as litigation against the Obama administration's health care reforms, but also gotten some criticism for her handling of mortgage fraud. Do you think she's someone to keep an eye on in 2012, Lou Fry?
Absolutely. You're looking at three cabinet members who happen to be Republican, but all want to be governor. Obviously, with Scott, if he nobody's going to run against him, I guess, is this time. But if he wins next time, he'll be a lame duck, and you're going to see all these cabinet people doing it. And the former congressman, our Secretary of Agriculture, is
Adam Putnam.
Is no question that he stepped back to come back home to build a base to run for governor. He doesn't, I don't think, want to be in the Senate as much as he wants to be. So it's going to be an interesting primary down the line, but let's get rid of this one.
So wait, so what does someone like Pam Bondi or Adam Putnam do in a year like 2012?
It's a great year to be on the not directly involved. The best way to get elected is do a good job. The best way elected is to take these projects, some of these programs that are really important, and run with them. Don't make them political. Try and find something that's a bipartisan thing and find some people on the Democratic side who will work for you. You'll be a breath of fresh air, and you'll build that political capital you need when you take it statewide.
How do Democrats relate to these cabinet members in the GOP that are going to be vying, we think, later on down the road for the governor's chair, Dick Batchelor?
I'm going to suggest that if the governor's ranking is still around 30%, I think all three names just mentioned are potential candidates for governor.
I think Jeff
Atwater, the CFO.
Yeah, good point.
Adam Putnam, who's a very impressive. He was like a 25-year-old congressman from Polk County and now Secretary of Agriculture in the state. And Pam Bondi. Pam Bondi's getting a lot of national media coverage on the things in which she's involved, particularly the lawsuit against the Barack Obama's health care plan. So they've got some really, very good exposure. And I tell you, if he ratchets up to 45% or so, fine. But if he's at 30%, the Republicans got to look around and say, look, can he win against a Democrat? If they think he cannot win against a Democrat, you think they will throw him under the bus? That's a rhetorical question. The answer is absolutely yes.
Do you think, though, we're going to see those cabinet members playing a bigger role as the legislative session
goes on?
Press conferences, sponsoring bills, or signing up?
Everyone has an agenda. Everyone has an agenda. Last year, Adam Putnam's big agenda was bringing food service out of the Department of Education into the Department of Agriculture. It was done. It was done unanimously. He had the hunger advocates on his side. I happen to serve on one of those not-for-profit boards. Every week, and believe me, in fact, there was a little bit of pushback about 2 weeks ago because the CFO, Jeff Atwater, had a legislative package that he was trying to move, and somebody asked the governor about it, and he goes, well, not his words but mine, maybe he should talk to me first. He is a cabinet member. So they're tiptoeing out there. So they absolutely, during the session, you'll see them walking halls, lobbying for their legislative packages, absolutely.
Do you think we're going to see Governor Rick Scott more hands-on during this legislative session? Because last year, he really wasn't out there hitting the halls and very publicly involved in many of the day-to-day debates.
Yeah, I think you'll see him somewhat more hands-on. I think they'll pick and choose. I go back to the fact that he's got good people up there running his office. They're not going to run him around wildly. I think it will be well measured when they use them.
Do you guys have been following this Florida A&M University hazing scandal that took place down in Orlando? Of course, recently the board pushed back against Governor Rick Scott when he called for the university's president to step down. Unusual for a governor to wade into something like this?
A little bit unusual. Can make a comment, but to intercede and ask that you replace the board, the president of the university was a little bit awkward because...
That's James Ammons.
But yeah, James Ammons, because you've got their charter basically says, you know, you're not supposed to have any influence, including political influence. So they kind of balance that whole thing. But there's a long history there, too, and it's a very difficult one to balance, too, when it comes to FAMU. But on the hazing issue, there's certainly a lot they can do. I see where Congresswoman Frederica Wilson from Miami has filed a bill to make it illegal, which begs the question, why should it be legal anyway, beating somebody to death, in this case, allegedly?
Hazing is just wrong. It's been wrong forever.
Wrong. Well,
and, you know, there's nothing, no way you can justify it.
Interesting also that you mentioned Frederica Wilson, who was, of course, involved in the Martin Lee Anderson boot camp beating death case as well, something that she's been aligned with.
Absolutely.
Fighting against
Absolutely.
For a while. I also want to ask just a little bit local. Future Florida House Speaker Chris Dorworth's financial troubles keep coming up in the news. The Lake Mary Republican's multi-million-dollar home in foreclosure, going through a contentious divorce, been accused of conflict.
Is there any
of
other kind?
Interest.
Fiscal conservative.
all this out, though, in the public view, and Dorworth on the slate to become Speaker in 2014. What does this negative press now mean for his political career, Lou Fry?
Well, you know, it's probably, if you're going to have bad press, now's a good time to have it.
Get it under.
Because it gets lost Absolutely. In the thunder and lightning going around on you. And if you have a problem, usually it's good to get that problem out early on and see what happens, see if it has any legs and where it's going to go.
Are people going to remember that, though, when he's House Speaker?
Some, but you know, if somebody has money running against them, they'll remember it all because they'll run the ads against them.
Well, they have a Democratic opponent this time who's a former firefighter who is also now a lawyer, and it depends on if he can gin up some money. You know, the sad commentary from a non-political standpoint is you compare him to Dean Cannon. What in the world are the Republicans doing? Go back and revisit. Just because you committed to vote for body speaker doesn't mean you can't change your mind. But if you look at the current Speaker of the House, compare him to Dorworth, I mean, there's no comparison, actually. Dean Cannon, I don't agree with a lot of what he's doing, but he's very honorable. He's honest. He's a very bright lawyer. He's a very good Speaker of the House as far as running the House. And then you follow that, say, with Chris Dorworth, with all that you just outlined for him, why are the Republicans doing that? So maybe it's wishful thinking.
He obviously has got the ability to attract people, and he has some leadership qualities.
And he's raised a lot of money. That's the other thing, too. You've got all these leaders, all these Republicans, and I guess Democrats, too, have these, quote, leadership funds. So they all have their own PACs now, so they can hand out money and basically, in some essence, buy votes. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But I would not want to – I don't think I'd be a very proud member of the Republican Party if that's my Speaker.
Well, the other thing I think is a problem is you get elected to the House, and you're running for Speaker if you want to do it. I mean, I think the term limit thing – just hasn't made a lot of sense, really hasn't worked, and has put more power in the lobbyist and in the staff. So,
well, as we move into these first days of 2012, Lou Fry, would you say your outlook is positive?
Yeah, but I believe Santa Claus is the Easter Bunny, you know, and it's been tougher to, it's been tougher to stay positive. This is the longest lasting economic downturn in my life. It's the third one. And it just doesn't seem to want to go away. And I keep looking for those bright stars up there and the nice sunshine coming up. And I think it's going to be a long year. I think it'll be better than last year. And, you know, but full of surprises.
Well, Dick Batchelor, are you feeling positive in the new year?
I am. You know, recently people have been quoting Churchill where he said that, you know, America always chooses the right thing to do after trying everything else, which fails. So we're now in the midst of trying things that fail. So maybe we'll finally try the thing that works.
All right. Well, I'm going to get you guys both a Cadbury cream egg. I've been speaking with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Thanks, guys. Coming up on Intersection, we remember late saxophonist Sam Rivers, who made Central Florida his home. Iconic saxophonist Sam Rivers passed away on December 26th. His career included stints with Miles Davis, B.B. King, Jimi Hendrix, and tons of other jazz luminaries. Rivers lived in Central Florida since the early 90s and was lured down by a community of musicians ready to embrace his creative efforts. The result was the Riv B. Orchestra, which became a local institution for creative musicians in Central Florida. The Riv B. Orchestra performs with brilliant exuberance, wild backgrounds, and plenty of room for soloing. Often it was Rivers launching improvisations with his soprano and tenor saxes and always generously allowing other members time to blow. In 2008, I spoke with Sam Rivers about his approach to playing.
You know, I play a little saxophone myself, and I find one of the hardest things is to escape from those patterns which you know so well under your fingers. How do you avoid that?
I just remember that I've done it and try not to do it again. That's it, you know, unless it's intentional to do it. But then you have, there's so many ways of doing the patterns, you know, there's so many different chord substitutions. So that if you learn all these chord substitutions, then you don't really get, bogged down in one pattern. And it takes a while, too, because, it's certain stages you go through. I mean, it's kind of a plateau, I guess. You stay at one plateau as long as you practice, and all of a sudden one morning you get up, and you've gone to another plateau. So, I think all learning is like that. It's not a gradual thing. The mind stores all this stuff inside of it, all this information, and then boom, it goes to another level like that. And that's the way the mind really works.
Wow. I wonder, if I asked you to play something beautiful, could you play something?
Something beautiful. Like everything I play is beautiful.
Not that it's not, but if you use that as an inspiration, a word of beauty or something like that in your mind, what would the musical translation of that be?
It would be just some melodies that would coincide with the traditional melody that I would be playing, like that. So it's hard to say what's beautiful. I remember Dizzy used to mention, he could say, "Sam, you play such beautiful melodies. Why are you always running over the horn like that, going over the horn, playing all these different, cadenzas and things when you play such beautiful melodies?" And I thought it was kind of strange coming from Dizzy, because that's what all he did was run over the horn, but you know.
Well, would you play us just one more thing?
As far as beautiful, it's beautiful in the mind of the beholder, or the listener, so it's hard for me to say.
Thank you, Sam Rivers.
Sure, you're welcome.
That's saxophonist Sam Rivers speaking on Intersection in 2008. He was 88 years old. You can find a link on our website, wmfe.org/intersection, to a profile of Sam Rivers. You'll also find our weekly podcast and the Florida Talks blog. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.